Okay, the Andy Finn Show is back, and we got a couple of things we want to talk about to wrap up this segment. I did have one or two more things before we get to politics.
Andy, how'd your Toastmaster speech go last night? I forgot to ask you about that.
Oh, yes. Okay, so people know that I'm involved in Toastmasters, and it's a speaking organization. Now, I've done a lot of public speaking, but I joined it for a couple of reasons. One is to break some bad habits I have, not just in public speaking, but also on the air. The saying ahs and ums, which are coming out right now as I'm trying to think of what I'm saying. And also just the ability to deliver powerful public speeches. And so it went well. This is my eighth speech in a 10-speech series. That's the first book. You're a qualified Toastmaster after you finish 10 speeches. And last night was about using visual aids. So you're supposed to take visual aids. So I came up with a topic that would require visual aids. Not every speech does, of course. And I did it on the diffusion of innovation. Now, that's kind of a academic topic. A fellow by the name of Ev Rogers produced this theory 40 years ago. In fact, Ev died last year. He was a friend and somebody who I really admired, and a professor at a number of different universities, including Stanford, USC, and University of New Mexico. And Ev proposed this diffusion of innovation, and there is a number of things you can look at to see whether or not an innovation is going to succeed, is the way to say it. So TiVo comes out, or the iPod comes out, and you say, well, should I buy one, or will it flop? And the way to analyze these is to look at the principles of the diffusion of innovation.
Hmm.
And so I'll make this real quick, but it is worth just covering briefly. First of all, there are five categories of people. There are the innovators, the top 2-4% that go out and buy technology new. It could be audio technology. It could be an iPod. It could be an idea like voting absentee or voting by mail in Oregon instead of going to the polls on election day. Those are innovators, the first few people to take it on. Then there's the early adopters, the next 10 to 15% of people who decide that, you know, this sounds like something I could use. It could be, you know, CDs, it could be personal computers, it could be anything. Then there are the majority, which are the early majority and the late majority, the bulk of people in the country that take on an innovation that say, you know, now it's time for me to join in. And this thing is useful. So think about cell phones, for example. There were early adopters. There were innovators, a very few percent that had it really early. There were innovators. And then the whole country took to it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But not everybody has a cell phone, right? There are still what they call laggards. The last 10 to 15% are the laggards, people that say, I'm not getting a cell phone until you make me. So there are these definite categories of people. And you can always look at, they're not always the same people. A laggard with cell phone technology might be an early adopter with a microwave.
Mm-hmm.
But the principle is there that there's always these categories. And they're always about the same percentages, which is what's interesting about the theory. More than 3,000 studies have been published in the scientific literature using Ev Rogers' theory, the diffusion of innovation. And they find the same general breakdown almost always, which is interesting.
Seems like a pretty secure model.
Yeah. And so what it comes down to is what they call an S-curve. And the S-curve is the rate of adoption. Now, not every innovation succeeds. Take the 8-track tape. It never took off. So instead of an S-curve, that is, if you map percent of people that take on the innovation across time, the S-curve is complete for innovations that succeed. Some innovations don't. The 8-track tape, the Sony Betamax, any number of ideas that don't catch on.
Laserdisc,
those end up not completing an S-curve. They fall off and they never make it as an innovation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a business book written a number of years ago called Crossing the Chasm that everyone was reading in the business world. And it's about the S-curve of innovation. And basically, it says, how do you get to that stage where you get the early majority and the late majority of adopters so that you have a wildly successful product instead of having it tank after you get 15% of the people using it? So then the best part of the theory is that Ev Rogers discovered five or six principles that go into what makes an innovation adaptable. The first is relative advantage. Is it better than what we had? And so if you think about the CD, for example, if you're spinning records at home, the CD has advantages. It's smaller, doesn't scratch as easy, and you can jump from track to track. It has advantages over the cassette in the car. You can't put long playing records in the car, but you can put CDs in the car, and they're better than cassettes because you can jump from track to track. You don't have to fast forward it. So relative advantage, yeah, CDs have a relative advantage. There are a few others, and I'm not going to go into all of them, but I'll just give you a couple of examples. One of them is trialability. Can I test it out? Think about car dealerships. They wouldn't sell anywhere near as many new cars as they do if you couldn't go in and drive them. Mm-hmm. They learned a long time ago, you have to let people trial these things. If you can trial something before you buy it, you'll take on an innovation if it's trialable. And there's a few other criteria, like how well does it fit with your current way of doing things, right? In the case of CDs, what worked against it was you had to replace all your long-playing records or your cassettes if you switched to CDs. So that's a strike against it, but it was still was enough of a relative advantage that people overcame that objection. So anyway, that's what I spoke about last night.
Interesting.
And I used graphs to show the S-curve and the breakdown of the users.
And it's called the diffusion of innovation?
Diffusion of innovation. And if you're thinking of buying something like an iPod, you can apply these criteria. And if you're thinking of investing in a stock and you think, somebody's got a good invention, this will really take off. You can ask yourself these questions. Does it have the relative advantage? Is it trialable? Can you observe the results? A variety of things like that.
Wow.
So it's a useful little thing.
No, it is.
I decided to talk about that last night because it was a good one for visual aids, and that was the main lesson in it.
And the reception from the audience was good on this particular topic, or?
I won best speaker.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. That's the second time. I've given eight speeches. It's the second time I've won best speaker of the evening.
What was the other topic that won you that award?
I don't even remember. Honestly, and there were other nights that I thought maybe I gave better speeches, but you know, somebody gives a good speech and it's just the way it is.
And you had no ums.
The grammarian who's there tracking ums and tracking whether or not you used the word of the day got up and said that I had no ums, which is a breakthrough for me because I tend to do it once in a while. All right, so we are going to get in the next segment to politics, and particularly the war in Iraq. There's a number of things going on, and not just Cindy Sheehan. But before I do that, I do want to talk about the price of gasoline. Mike, the price of gas went up 18 cents in the last week across the country.
I know.
It is up to an average of $2.55 per gallon, and that's up 36% over a year ago. That's a big increase. 36% in a year? It's way above inflation. Mm-hmm. Somebody's making obscene profits, as we used to say in the 70s.
I wonder who that could be.
I'm not happy about it. I'm sure it's the man who wears the star.
It cost me $48.50 to fill up my Imperial gas guzzler the other day. I was most displeased. $2.57.
I broke $40, and I drive a Camry.
Wow.
I broke $40, and it wasn't like it was bone dry.
Yeah.
But I think I'm paying $2.68 or something here in the D.C. area.
Yeah, it's absurd.
The gas in D.C. was running. I drove out to Assateague Island this week. I got out camping. I walked on the beach each of the last 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I went kayaking with a friend. And so I watched the gas stations as I drove from Maryland through D.C. and into, I'm sorry, from Virginia through D.C. and into Maryland. And the gas, the average across it all was like 265, 275, 285. Because I'm talking regular. I'm not buying premium when I say I'm paying 268.
Yeah, you're buying the 87 octane.
If I could get 82 octane, I'd do it.
Yeah, the sad thing is I'm not that old, but I remember just 10, 11 years ago, I was paying like less than a dollar in Pensacola, Florida for 87 octane.
Those were the days.
Gasoline.
I remember when gasoline was 33 cents a gallon.
Do you really?
Yeah, oh, and more than that, the used to have price wars. It'd get down to 20 cents a gallon.
Oh, the good old days.
The good old days. And my father would tell me, oh, that's nothing. It used to be 8 cents. Of course, he ran in the gas station.
Back in my day, it was free.
That's right. It was less than free. They paid you to take the gas in the early days.
I actually heard a report, though, that said if you compare the price today to gas, they said if you adjust the when we had that whole oil crunch in the late 70s,
right.
They said we were paying just as much in adjusted dollars
actually,
back
then
than we
are true.
Now.
That is true.
So take some solace in that.
I know, but it makes a better story if we hadn't brought that up. We'll be back.
Me and little brother slip out the bedroom window, slide down.